Good morning and welcome in the name of Christ. Today we are turning to the book of Psalms, Psalm 22 verses 25 through 31. Although the lectionary for today only uses the last part of this well-known psalm, we will consider the whole of the psalm and the full spectrum of emotions that are expressed by the author. When in an election year, we often hear one of those catchy little phrases from politicians running for office that are hard to forget. Many times they will come up with some mantra that resonates with the people. In the last election, it was, "Make America Great Again." In the election before that, with Obama, it was, "Yes, we can." Go back a little further, and it was, "Change we can believe in." And then, "No child left behind," and "compassionate conservatism." Go back even further when Ronald Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter, and it was Reagan who stood in front of the crowd and asked, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?" Evidently, most people did not think they were, because they voted him into office by a notable margin. Even though I did not always agree with his politics, Reagan was truly a gentleman statesman. He debated with civility. He always treated others, even political opponents, with respect. And he always seemed to display a cheery, optimistic attitude, even when it was not easy to do so. Reagan's question was compelling then, and it is still very pertinent today. So how would you answer? Are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? How about 10 years ago? Or even a generation ago? I am convinced that a lot of folks today would say they are not. Not only are they no better off, but many would say that they are worse off than they were 40 years ago. They have less income, fewer benefits, and less job security than they did a generation ago, while the wealth of the top 10% continues to grow at an astounding rate. All you must do these days to get a good dose of pessimism is to watch any 24-hour news channel for a few hours, and it won't take long before the constant bombardment of bad news and predictions of gloom and doom will wipe out any positive thoughts that you may have been able to hang on to thus far. Yes, if those of us who are a little older allow ourselves to think about it very much, it makes it quite easy for us to begin reminiscing about the good old days, when times were simpler and things were better. Well, at least we would like to think they were better, and some things were. However, if we are honest, we must admit that many things were not better, and that we have made progress in many areas. Anyway, it seems to me that finding a reason to be anxious and pessimistic is easy in today's world, and watching too many of those shout fests on Fox News or CNBC will make it harder for even the staunchest optimist to maintain a positive attitude. But then I read about a report by a columnist for the Times of London, Philip Collins, who believes that there were some milestones that have been achieved in our world at the end of 2016. He quoted that the proportion of the world's population living in abject poverty had fallen below 10% for the first time in history. He also stated that carbon emissions globally had not risen for the third year in a row, that half of the countries in the world had gotten rid of the death penalty, and that giant pandas were no longer on the endangered list. This must have had an effect on some attitudes, because a few weeks later, Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times named 2016 as the best year in the history of humanity. Kristof cited declines in many areas of global inequities. He wrote that child mortality rate was now roughly half of what it had been in 1990, and that 300,000 people in the world are gaining access to electricity every day. However, most of these things are not acknowledged. And the reason we don't hear about them is because good news seldom ever makes the news. A lot of people constantly bemoan this fact. But yet, isn't this problem a reflection of our own skewed values? Think of it this way. If you placed two newspaper stands side by side with these headlines, "Prominent politician caught in lurid affair," or "World hunger rates reduced to lowest levels in history," which paper do you think most people would buy? And to really drive the point home, now be honest, which paper would you buy? So when we grouse and complain about the media only reporting bad news and never reporting good news, whose fault really is it? Perhaps if we want to see the media change what they are reporting on, the change we seek needs to begin with us and the kinds of news that we are consuming. But there are groups out there like the New Optimists who are fighting against these negative attitudes and trying to change the public's dominant perception that the world's going to hell in a handbasket. They call themselves the New Optimists to purposely thumb their noses at groups like the New Atheists, led by such notable naysayers as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. These modern-day philosophers claim to be atheists and have worked very hard to use science to shore up their positions. They work hard to try to disprove the basic premise of the book of Genesis, which makes the claim that God created the world good, that it is orderly by design and not based on mere random chance. Columnist Oliver Berkeman, who writes for The Guardian, states that the New Optimists believe that our prevailing mood of despair is irrational and, frankly, a bit self-indulgent. He argues that it says more about us than it does about how things really are, illustrating a certain tendency towards collective self-flagellation and an unwillingness to believe in the power of human ingenuity. This pessimistic view, he points out, it's an ancient survival mechanism that is programmed into the human race. He states, "The cave dweller who always assumed there was a lion behind the next rock would usually be wrong, but he'd be much more likely to survive and reproduce than the one who assumed the opposite." It's just a fact. Most of us are all too ready to believe the worst about any situation. It's like the human brain acts like Velcro for anything negative and Teflon for anything that is positive. In his book, Progress, 10 Reasons to Look Forward to the Future, author Johan Nøberg points to 10 reasons why our standard of living will continue to get better worldwide. Things like access to food, clean water, sanitation, life expectancy, the state of the environment, literacy, freedom, and equality will all continue to get better, and that we will continue to see improvements in all of these areas. He writes, "It wasn't so long ago that dogs gnawed at the abandoned corpses of plague victims in the streets of European cities. As recently as 1882, only 2% of the homes in New York City had running water. In 1990, worldwide life expectancy was a paltry 31 years of age, thanks to both early adult death and rampant child mortality. But by contrast, today, life expectancy is about 71 years of age. And because of all the advancements in healthcare, those extra decades involve far less suffering as well. It is clear that we must work harder at having a positive attitude so that we don't fall back into an obsession with the good old days. And this is a problem that is very prominent in many of our church congregations. We must be careful to cultivate a positive attitude and look ahead to the bright future that God has in store for us. And to achieve this, we must keep our eyes focused on the future instead of the past. Psalm 22 is one of the best examples of this change in attitude. It's hard to find a better example in Scripture of such an about-face. This psalm is mostly a lament, and this is the very psalm that Jesus quoted as he hung on the cross. And in his own despair, he cried out, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And the troubled author of this psalm continues by saying, "I am a worm and not a human, and my heart is like wax. It is melted within my breast." It is clear that this person was experiencing a deep sense of grief. But then, very abruptly, the mood drastically changes, starting at verse 22. "I will tell of your name to my brothers and sisters in the midst of the congregation. I will praise you," the psalmist writes. The reason for this change in attitude becomes clear in verse 24, as the poet praises God, who did not hide his face from me, but heard when I cried out to him. Even after all of this suffering, the author of this psalm does not fail to express gratitude toward God for at least being a good listener to their complaints. As we also face both tribulation and joy in our lives, we also will find ourselves alternating between lament and praise. The challenges of life are certain to knock us down for a time, but then we need to not let it keep us down and in a state of depression. The Apostle Paul captures this same sentiment very well in his second letter to the Corinthians when he writes, "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed." Chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Pessimist or optimist, gloom and doom, or joy and hope? We do good as followers of Jesus Christ to locate ourselves somewhere in between these two positions. While it is important to be realistic in our assessment of our surroundings and our world, it is also important to remember that God is in charge, and we are being cared for, even when it doesn't feel like we are. If there is one thing that I can guarantee, it is that we will all experience times of difficulty and loss at some point in our lives. There are times when we need to spend time lamenting an event or grieving the loss of a loved one. But we must be careful not to allow ourselves to fall into a permanent state of anxiety and depression. Life is far too short. And as a follower of Jesus Christ, we cannot help but to be optimistic about the future. If we have turned our life over to Christ, then we are saved from sin and death. And no matter what happens to us, we have a bright future ahead of us. This is God's promise to us. I believe Psalm 22 is a great example of where we need to be as Christians. There are times in our lives when we will experience all of the different emotions the psalmist communicates in this psalm, from "Why have you forsaken me?" to "Proclaim the Lord's deliverance to a people yet unborn." This is a very practical guide for us as Christians in how we should also be realistic but optimistic, attentive to the world we live in, but joyful and thankful, and looking ahead to the bright future that God has planned for us. Besides, I've always maintained that there is no worse witness for Jesus Christ than an old, sour, grumpy Christian. So put a smile on your face and be ready to tell others why you are smiling, because you are a follower of Jesus Christ. so that we may be salt and light. Amen.